It's Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Mal Leary and Steve Missler. So, now we know there will be a vote in the House on articles of impeachment against President Trump. The lingering questions appear to be how many and what they will say. And it means Maine's 2nd District Democratic Congressman Jared Golden will have to cast a vote on whether the president's behavior has been so bad he should be forced to stand trial in the Senate and possibly be forced from office. Steve Missler, let's remind folks, why for Jared Golden is that such a fraught vote?
The biggest reason is that he represents a district that in 2016 overwhelmingly supported the president. The president was a plus 10 in the 2nd congressional district. And so the conventional wisdom is that if Jared Golden votes for impeachment, then he will be angering a lot of his constituents there, which is one of the reasons why he sort of tiptoed his way up to actually even supporting the inquiry itself. He finally got there, but there was a lot of machinations before he did. And now there's a lot of pressure on him from Republicans trying to cast him as anti-Trump and also hitting him on another key issue. You can see this all over the country, too, with Congress people in similar districts. The attack from the White House and congressional Republicans is that impeachment is delaying the passage of vital legislation, new trade deals, NAFTA 2.0, or the USMCA, as it's formally known as. That's what Golden is encountering right now. And so he's trying to spend some time reassuring constituents that, no, we've passed a lot of bills. The real holdup is in the Republican-controlled Senate. And he was doing this at a town hall earlier this week, where he was basically saying, look, we've done a lot of stuff for veterans. That was the focus of this town hall. It was a veteran-specific event. And interestingly enough, impeachment did not come up in that event. And so I think, you know, he's trying to keep the focus there and off of impeachment. But at the end of the day, he's going to have to cast a vote, and he will be judged for it one way or the other.
One of the things that I've heard in recent days is that some members who are in positions like Golden's may choose to support some but not all of the articles of impeachment based on what they say. Is that a possible kind of escape route in a situation like this?
It could be. And the other thing is that I keep hearing this idea of a censure instead of impeachment. This has been floated mostly by Republicans that are sort of on the fence, not Republicans who are elected. They all seem very united behind the president, but people outside of government. Golden, interestingly enough, when I talked to him about it, he kept mentioning that he hoped that there would be a bipartisan avenue here. I don't know what that would look like or if it's purely fantasy, because I just don't see it. But he talked about that a lot. Well, you know, he's basically said, look, I find what the president did very and deeply troubling. I just don't know what should be done about it. He has not committed one way or the other how he's going to vote.
Mal, any thoughts?
I think what happened to that town meeting that Steve covered is sort of instrumental in what's going on across the country. If you look at the polling data, impeachment just is not an issue that's resonating with a lot of voters. It's like there, and they know about it, and they hear politicians talk about it, but the numbers have not changed much. We who cover this issue carefully, you know, look at all of these various things that come out that shows what would clearly be improper conduct for a president of the United States. And the poll numbers do not change. His approval is just about where it's been. His disapproval is just about where it's been. One of the things I think you have Golden worried about is, no matter what he does on this impeachment vote, is it really going to have that much of an impact on his election when voters don't seem to really care that much about it?
This is a very fascinating dynamic, especially in the 2nd congressional district, because let's not forget, I mean, in recent years, as in the last three, people keep talking about the 2nd congressional district as if it's Alabama or something, or like it's just so red that any sort of defiance of the president is perilous. But I don't see it that way because, first of all, that district went for Obama twice and hard. And then Trump came in and presumably convinced some of those same voters to vote for him. Then there was some recent reporting and some polling data that suggests that last year during the midterms, which was a Democratic wave year, there were a lot of voters who voted for Trump who actually voted for people like Golden because they wanted to check the president. What does that mean going forward? You know, if Golden votes for impeachment Are those voters really going to be that angry with him? I don't know. I mean, they seem to have a lot of different motivations. One is that they want to check the president. Two, they might have a local issue that's important to them. And that's, I think, perhaps why you're seeing Republicans hitting people like Golden on the paralysis in Washington, basically saying impeachment is taking out all the oxygen out of the Capitol. Now, first of all, let's acknowledge that gridlock in D.C. would happen probably if impeachment were a thing or not. This is the way things are in D.C. right now. So the idea that, you know, if impeachment went away, they would start passing everything. That seems fantastical to me.
Well, we had a shutdown of government over the question of the wall, not over the question of the impeachment. You know, that was less than a year ago. One of the things I've learned from a lot of political scientists I've talked with is so often we try to cast voters in these blocks. Does this block support this issue or that issue? Well, and the reality is that each individual voter usually has a whole bunch of issues they're concerned about, and they'll make a very personal decision based on what a candidate says about those particular issues. When you try to put them into these blocks, like overwhelmingly red in the second district, it just does not, you know, ring true. And I think that's the real problem we're facing as we try to analyze what's going on in the election. An awful lot of people are making these decisions on issues that are not getting the attention that we're giving impeachment.
And that's really interesting too, right, Mal, is that what you're seeing is Republicans really trying to nationalize that second congressional district race, right? Where, you know, they really want this to be about the president. And, you know, they've been putting out statements, the national GOP, the main GOP, highlighting Golden's anti-Trump voting record. Mike Michaud, who was a Democrat, served in that district for 10 years. And I don't recall a single press release where they were casting Michaud as anti-George W. Bush. I don't remember that. Maybe Mal does. He's got more institutional memory than I do. I don't recall that. You know, what they would try to do is take someone who is a moderate like Michaud or somebody like Golden or even Susan Collins and try to cast them as basically partisans cloaked as moderates. This is a little bit different. They're actually trying to tie Golden to the president or, you know, show that he's insufficiently faithful to him or something.
Mal, let me ask you this because you've been around for a long time. Steve was mentioning before that attempt to nationalize this kind of election. Do you see from the voting trends over the last couple, three decades, that our congressional elections, especially for the House, are becoming more nationalized, or are they still more built on local issues?
Mostly on local issues. Do you quote the famous Tip O'Neill quote, you know, all politics is local? And you can have somebody who toes the line on the national party but screws up on some local issue, suddenly finding themselves out of office. And that goes for either party. I mean, there has been some attempts at nationalization. I think the most recent one was George Bush following 9/11. That became the issue. You know, we need to have him carry forward the war against terror. That was the real thrust of that election in 2004.
Interestingly, too, is that, you know, while Republicans are trying to nationalize the race in the second congressional district, Democrats are trying to do that in the U.S. Senate race, aren't they? I mean, they're taking a little bit of a different tact on Trump, right? But at the same time, because I think Trump is just sort of a base motivator for Democrats. And so they don't need to mention him all the time. Democrats are going to turn out to oppose him.
But I think, in fairness, our Senate races have always been more about national issues than local issues.
Right. I think that's probably true. But I guess what I'm saying is maybe tying Senator Collins to the president, which I think could be perilous for her, which is why she is focusing on her campaign. It's not official yet, but it's certainly acting like one. She is focusing on all the, you know, these grants and pork that she's been able to secure, you know, in these spending bills that have made their way back to Maine. And the implication or the subtext of that message to Maine voters is that, hey, if you get me out of here, that pork gravy train will stop coming because you're going to elect somebody who has less seniority than I do.
And that's something that the reality is. You really have great difficulty trying to figure out the motivation of voters, no matter what race you're talking about.
By the way, has anybody yet heard of any potential date when Senator Collins will announce if she is indeed running for re-election?
Anybody who's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on television already, I think, has de facto announced, even though she hasn't actually come out and had a news conference yet.
Yeah, to Mal's point, I mean, the only thing I've seen, I saw a tweet from a reporter at Bloomberg basically saying that she reiterated to him in the hallways, I think yesterday, that before the end of fall. So that's what we have, 2 weeks left?
Yeah. We also have word, of course, that Bernie Sanders is now qualified for Maine's Democratic presidential primary. Gentlemen, do we know who else is showing up on that ballot so far?
No, he's the only one so far, but I would expect there would be some of the heavy hitters, you know, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg. I think they would be close behind, in part because Warren and Bernie Sanders in particular have ground operations that are working here. If you recall, Elizabeth Warren's campaign announced back in early fall that they were going to deploy resources not just to help her campaign, but also to help unseat Senator Collins. So, you know, those people are already out doing their canvassing, and so that would double as a petition signature gathering effort. The other ones to watch out for, I think, are Michael Bloomberg, who's spending a ton of money nationwide, including in Maine. Those ads have just started running here locally. And so he's kind of hoping that that will help get him on the ballot and also qualify for debates, you know, going into the new year. The other one I would watch out for, too, is Tom Steyer, who's this billionaire. He also founded this organization called NextGen. As we tape this segment, NextGen is holding a series of climate strikes across Maine at four different locations.
And I think what's more important is to watch about who doesn't file.
Yeah, that's right.
As opposed to who does file. That's going to be very interesting. And we'll kind of point to what's going on nationally. If we have some of these top-tier candidates not go on the ticket here in Maine, that's going to be telling us something.
All right, so the last item we'll talk about, there was a hearing held by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers about Central Maine Power's power line that's to run across western Maine. This power line is to bring hydroelectric power from Quebec to the electric grid in Massachusetts, where presumably it may help to smooth out energy prices across New England. Steve Missler, this we're seeing a lot of advertising about this, and there was a fair amount of turnout of opponents to this project at this hearing.
Yeah, and that was expected, I think. I mean, what we saw or heard in our case last night was a lot of the arguments that have been surrounding this debate for over a year now. What's interesting to me is how those arguments are now they're starting to filter into candidate races in the 2nd District in particular, where two candidates there, Eric Brakey, the Republican, and Adrian Bennett, another Republican, basically came out in opposition to the project. Adrian Bennett also took a swipe at Jared Golden because he had put out a statement earlier prior to the hearing on Thursday, basically saying, look, if this project is going to go forward, there should be a project labor agreement, which would help ensure that Mainers get those jobs and get a variety of benefits, whether they're union or non-union. Basically, Adrian Bennett was claiming that Golden is selling out to special interests to support the project. Jared Golden has not said one way or the other if he supports the project. He's basically said if it is going to happen, they should sign this labor agreement. What's interesting is that I don't know how much of that will be factored into the race as it goes forward next year. At the end of the day, what can Jared Golden do to stop this thing except, ask federal agencies to keep intervening?
Well, and he doesn't really have to do anything. He can always say that this is a matter for the voters to decide.
That's right.
And the reality is, whenever you have an issue like this, and you can look through the history of Maine on things like the Turnpike referendum, all of a sudden, those become important issues to politicians because that's what the voters are talking about. And we have a lot of voters talking about the corridor and the work that will be done and whether it will benefit Maine or not. That's why you're getting all of these politicians jumping in, making sure that folks know where they stand or where they have concerns about the project.
Yeah, I think we'll be talking quite a lot about this. As we were saying internally in our newsroom, this will be a very major political story next year.
Yeah, and I think that's why you're already seeing ads, as we've discussed here before. CMP is up with ads. The opponents will be out with ads soon. And Hydro-Quebec, which is the supplier of this electricity, just started a political action committee. They had a filing with the Maine Ethics Commission in that I noticed just the other day, which means there's going to be a ton of money in advertising trying to convince Maine voters that this is either the best thing since sliced bread or the worst thing since, I don't know, what's the worst?
Maine Public's State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler and senior political reporter Matt Leary. And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We post new versions of our podcast each Friday afternoon. You can download it at mainepublic.org/politicalpulse or wherever you get your podcasts. You can hear most of the Political Pulse Sunday mornings during Weekend Edition and a shorter excerpt on Monday's Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz.